resources to you. You also have water. You brought your own.
I did. Thank you.
It is nice to meet you. I'm Jane Balow from Rochester, and we're going to start with Lois Josephson and go around the table and introduce ourselves.
Lois Josephson, Fergus Falls, Minnesota.
Paul Thatcher, Minneapolis.
George Sundstrom, Two Harbors.
Billy Young, St. Paul.
Rebecca Covington, Duluth.
Harriet Porter, Woodbury.
Jerry Rogers, Moorhead.
Jennifer Godinez, St. Louis Park.
Rich Newell, Woodbury.
Pat Duncanson,
Jane Balow.
Joanne Stately, Plymouth.
David Fisher, Minneapolis.
Bill Brady, St. Paul.
Ardell Brady, Rochester.
Sonia Cairns, Minneapolis.
My name is Paul Taylor, and I'm from Minnetonka.
Bert Watson, Park Rapids.
Margaret Carlson, Minnetonka.
So the Catalan, excuse me, so the Catalan St. Paul, and the student representative on the council.
Richard Esther from Ada.
Jim Erickson, Minneapolis.
Great.
And we welcome you to the first interview of the afternoon.
Right after lunch.
Yeah, right after lunch. And invite you, Mr. Rickman, to give an opening statement of 3 to 5 minutes, if you will.
Okay, thank you. I looked at the specs for the opening statement, and I thought I can do this. I don't like to talk about myself, and I threw some things down and then walked through it, and I was 8 minutes in before I got to any of the good stuff. So I decided to just pick out some things that maybe aren't in my application to talk to you about, and then hopefully address other things I want to say in the Q&A. First of all, I want to thank you for the opportunity. I understand what a honor and privilege it is for me to be here. That's not lost on me. A little bit about my background. I grew up in Hutchinson, Minnesota, on a family farm. My dad is a farmer. My mother went to normal training and taught multiple grades in a single-room schoolhouse outside of Hutchinson. For the first 10 years, we had no heat upstairs where my two brothers and I slept. It's in Minnesota. And we had no running water. We had a pump in the basement. And in the wintertime, we had a dirt floor basement, and we had skunks come in the wintertime, and you could hear them in the walls. Mm-hmm. And they'd say, well, why is that relevant to anything? when you could hear them in the wall, and if you took your fist and kind of punched the wall where the noises came from, you could be out of school for 2 or 3 days. Mm-hmm. By the age of 10, I knew I could have an impact on education. I played basketball for Hutchinson back when there was only one state tournament for basketball. I remember Ada, 1966. Ada, we didn't play Ada, but they were in the tournament. An aside, nothing to do with this. My brother, who's a year older than me, was the first Rickman ever to go to college. He went to Morris. I was the second. The Minneapolis campus was a beacon, and I don't use that word lightly. It was my only option, really, that I considered. It was as big as I could think. So when it comes to university mission, at least at the undergraduate level, I think I've lived it. I have a lot of other long-term associations with you that I want to run through. I have to list them. Hang on a second. I'm a graduate. Well, I can't find it. I'll try to remember. I'm a graduate, 1971, honors graduate, CLA, math and economics. My firm, I was a long-term career at Accenture. The University of Minnesota was a major client of ours in terms of long-term nature. We developed the donor management systems for the U. That started about 1980, and we worked with Margaret and a lot of people in a very successful long-term partnership. As a business, we also sponsored the first ever U of M M Club Hall of Fame, Anderson Consulting. We did advertising in university documents. We sponsored the athlete scholar banquet. Did a lot of stuff. Maybe most importantly, we recruited a lot of people from the university, and we still do. Accenture still does. I've been a donor. I'm a member of the President's Society, President's Club Trustee Society. We have a lifetime endowment fund at the U that gives CLA scholarships, and I think we've given 2 to 6 student scholarships every year for the last 5 or 6 years out of that, which is the best investment I've ever made. I've been a volunteer with CLA, with Steve Rosenstone, and currently with the Heller-Hurwitz Institute in the Department of Economics. I'm on the advisory group. And not in there, but equally important, and maybe uniquely, I've been on the faculty. I taught a 1-credit course in creativity as a freshman seminar. I think it was when Steve Rosenstone first initiated freshman seminars in CLA. I taught a 1-credit course. I think I was the only non-faculty, non-employee teaching a seminar at that point. My wife, Kathy Murphy, is currently on the Arboretum Foundation Board. And she's also an alum. So that's a lot of stuff. I've always had a call for service. When I got out of grad school, I evaluated the Peace Corps. I was accepted to go to Botswana, and I also got a Woodrow Wilson Fellowship. If you don't know what that is, that's money that allows you to take people with business degrees into African American colleges in the South and help with the administration. So it funded business people to go into those administrative roles. I hate debt. I don't like debt. I had debt coming out of graduate school, so I took a job instead. Deferring that service initiative. But all throughout my career, I've been very involved in not-for-profits and volunteering. American Diabetes Association for 10 years. I was a state chair and national treasurer the same year in 1985. And I really like that because you get to work with a lot of different kinds of people. In a business career, you have kind of the same stuff, and it's very methodology-oriented. It's different when you work with doctors, lawyers, and moms of diabetics, so that was very valuable to me. I retired at the age of 52. People always want to know about that. And my argument is I was a math major, so I grew up on a farm, so I really retired at 65. I started working at the age of 10. And my whole life, I always knew I wasn't going to end up on the farm. I didn't know what I was going to do. But I knew it was going to be something out there. But I always wanted a freedom of choice. And working on your farm work, your school, then your career, I always wanted to get to a point where I had freedom of choice to do what I wanted to do. And that's one of the reasons I retired. Another reason I could retire is obviously financial freedom is a big part of it. I had no debt. Did I mention I don't like debt? I don't like debt. I have 2 girls at home, 15 and 11, so they think I'm a chauffeur. One of the selfish reasons for looking at this is to get out of the house. I do pick and choose involvements with charitable groups, and I want them to be challenging, and I want them to be fun. So those are my 2 criteria. I was going to cover a bunch of stuff on Accenture. I won't do that. I think I'm going too long here. I'm an old white guy from Wayzata. I don't know if that's a demographic you're looking for. I have been very involved in equity, diversity issues at the Blake School. Big supporter, known to be a supporter. Basically, messages that equity and diversity aren't programs or not add-ons. If you don't have it, you don't have academic excellence. So it's not something extra. It's something that has to be an ingredient. And equity doesn't mean treating everybody the same. That's not enough. You've got to recognize that everybody needs an equal opportunity to succeed, and therefore they might need different programs, different things. So that's what we've been spending a lot of time on the last couple of years. And at Accenture, I was known for being a supporter of women and other non-dominant groups. What else can I tell you? I understand the role of the region. I understand that the regents are the Board of Regents is powerful as a group, not individuals. I understand the chair and the president speak for the university. I think debate is good. I like to speak out. I know when to speak, and more importantly, I know when to shut up. I think I've been a positive force in those environments that I've been in. I always try to do no harm. I like to pick organizations that are already very successful and first do no harm and then hopefully say the place is better when I left than when I started. I got interested in this when I saw the letter to the editor from Mr. Fisher soliciting input. I'm not politically connected. I don't have any political experience, really. And the process has always been mysterious to me. But I said, well, I'll go into the website, and I actually saw myself in the specs, so that's why I'm here. I did go back and review the videos of the last year's meetings of the Board of Regents, and I downloaded a lot of information just to make sure I could see myself in that environment. I know integrity is big, so let me see. I used the fast-forward button a lot. But I did do some homework, so I'm pleased to answer your questions. I didn't cover my work experience. What I think I bring to the table, other than I have passed the CPA exam. I've never been an accountant, but I've been treasurer of multiple organizations. I understand financial situations. Accenture, we basically, our practice was implementation of big solutions in complex environments with four parts: strategy, technology, business process, and change management, recognizing that all four of those things have to come into play. And a lot of times we were hired to come into complicated environments just to put some structure on getting stuff done, and that's what we were good at. And Accenture today is a $25 billion global services firm. When I started in Minneapolis in 73, we were 20 people in the group, and it grew to almost 2,000 here in Minneapolis. So it was fun to be part of that. I'm done.
All right. And the privilege of the first question goes to Billy.
Oh, how can I be so lucky? You are a refreshing voice, I must say. And I think that you could probably be that on the Board of Regents. How does a guy who hates debt approach the financial problems that the university is going is dealing with, and when they learn what the state isn't going to give them this year, will be even worse? I don't mean to be facetious about this, but I think your approach, I'm serious. I'm glad I didn't spend winters in your house as a kid, but I learned a lot from your story.
Thank you.
So, that was too long, but it's yours.
If I had that solution, I think I should be probably hired on the spot, which I know I don't, and you won't. I think the state understands I think the general population understands that the university isn't a cost; it's a huge investment for the state. What bothers me in that whole analysis that I've looked at it is, Bob Brunix and the team has done such a good job of balancing the budget every year. And there are metrics the university has defined for defining success, and they've gone. Most of them have gone up. So if you're at the state legislature and you're looking at this, you go, we've cut them, six of the last 8 years?
Yeah.
Everything's great. Tuition's up. Maybe that's bad, but it's still university can figure out a way to make it work. So that bothers me.
Yeah.
I think we need to look. What's the tipping point where lack of state funding really requires some tough decisions, either on tuition or on one of the things that is supposedly being looked at, which is narrowing the mission, which that scares me too. What does that mean? And that's very volatile, I think, in terms of trying to figure out what that might mean. But up to this point, they've done a very good job at the U of balance of managing the costs.
They may not have been too smart in the long run.
Well, it really is a catch-22.
Yeah,
what do you do?
Right.
You say, well, let's screw something
penalized
up, so we'll show those people at the state. And you can't do that either. So I think you have to manage what you can control. And if you can't control, you can control the message, you can control the pitch, you can control the analysis. But you still have to manage university the way you want it to be managed. But I think having an idea of where those tough decisions come and what they might be, that's something that has to be carefully thought through. And I don't know what that is. I know that in the past, when universities try to cut programs in narrow focus, it can be very politically volatile. Yeah. The other thing I would say on that topic is, and it was in my application too, and as on the Blake Board and the Minneapolis Foundation Board, most Minnesotans think Minnesota education is still way up there. And I don't care what measure you look at, you know, we slipped. I think part of the university message is we are the core of Minnesota education. We're the beacon. And I don't think the university needs to spend a lot of money programming that area and trying to figure out messaging. But I think there's a trickle-down effect. If you have a strong central university, I think that can be a very powerful force for figuring out K through 12, because that's the feeder system. I know there are efforts underway in that regard. But I think that's what I kind of worry about.
Thank you.
All right, Harriet Porter.
I know you don't like to talk about yourself, but if you had to describe in three adjectives, or I'll even give you the liberty to expand those to phrases, what has made you successful? What would those be?
Choices that I made and when I made them, working hard, and part of that, I think what I've seen that I do that other people don't do, I think, is sometimes you, in any endeavor, you take on jobs or activities that you really don't really have to do for your job, but it advances you, and you know, do things that you don't have to do, but there's some good reason to do it. Make a speech, volunteer. I've always been inclined to exert myself, and I think that's what I tell my kids that they should look to do, is always do your job and a little bit more. I've always tried to do that. I think I said hard work. I think I've always differentiated myself, and other people have told me this, that I don't have an ego the way some people do. I have a tendency to, I call it the out-of-body experience. I can look at a situation and look at it without putting myself in it. I have a fight with my wife all the time about this, because I tell her she can't do that, and I can, and I end up losing. But I think it's important in roles like this where you have to look at situations objectively. You can't have an agenda. You can't have, necessarily even an emotional attachment that's too strong one way or the other. So I've, that would be part of it. I think I'm viewed as a creative person. And I had 28 years in business. So I would not say I'm entrepreneurial, because if I were entrepreneurial, I'd gone out and created my own business. But within the structure that I had, I was regarded as entrepreneurial, creative, different. And I enjoyed that. I enjoyed that, you know, people thought I was a little bit different. A sense of humor is a big part of what I have. I was watching an interview with our new president, and at the end they asked him, what are we going to know about you in 3 years that we don't know today? And he said, I have got a sense of humor. Very pleasantly surprised. And he basically said, like I believe, you deal with very, very important issues, but you've got to not take everything so seriously. You've got to be able to step out and deal with stuff.
Okay, George Sunstrom.
Thank you.
Mr. Rickman, I have two questions. One, when you rapped on the wall, you really didn't like school that much, did you? And the question is, you didn't rap on the wall after the third day again, did you?
No.
That was good enough.
I had basketball practice. I never actually rapped on the wall. But we did have incidents, however, and I did have to stay away from school. So
it was better before.
Yeah, I know. The story worked better the way I told it.
My real question. How do you see the relationship between the board, or you as a board member, and the president of the university?
I think, and I had that in my application too, I think one of the key things for the regions going forward is to have a smooth transition. So I think that's what that means to me is be very supportive of the new president, make sure that the transition is smooth. I don't think that means necessarily agreeing or, you know, with every issue, but developing a good working relationship and a trust level that allows you to have, you know, direct conversations with him. But he's the leader of the university, an individual regent, does not have power beyond the group as a whole. But I do think the personal and the board relationship with the new president will be important. And that's balancing what we're doing well. And I do think the university is living up to its mission. I do. So I don't come into this with an agenda that there's some kind of issue we need to get on right away. I think there are challenges, but it's important to have kind of maintain the old, but also respect any views or thoughts that he might have for where he wants to take the university because he's in charge.
Richard Newell.
I'd like to kind of explore how you view the role of the board with respect to governance as contrasted to management. It's kind of the first part of the question. The second part is also you've had a lot of experience on boards. What makes a good board, or what makes a board kind of have difficulties, and what can you bring to that board to make sure that it's a high-performing board?
Well, the difference between governance and management, I think I understand that micromanaging or having agendas in the innards of the organization is one of the worst things you can have. So governance to me means oversight. It means looking top down, asking questions, having debates about issues that are appropriate at the policy level, but not getting involved in personnel matters, not getting involved in anything other than the only employee the board has is the president. So again, that's supporting the president. I've been on a lot of boards. I think, and I would say I was on the board of the Minnesota Opera, and I gave it a shot. I went to every opera for 2 years, but that was a business kind of thing. Okay, so I would say I hope they would say I was a good board member. I would say, you know, I didn't have the passion for it. And I gave it a shot. I went to 2 years of operas, but I don't have the passion for opera, and I think you need to have that. So passion for the cause, showing up is a huge part. Doing the work is a huge part. Speaking out, you don't have to be verbose, but having knowledge of the issues on the table and having opinions I think is good. I think debate is good. I think debate, even differences of opinion, I think the most effective board situations I've been in where you're debating different points of view on a policy issue. And again, at Blake, for example, we've gone through a pay-for-performance situation. We've gone through a pluralism approach that's been controversial, as was pay-for-performance, and there wasn't agreement across the board, but the process resulted in, you know, unanimous support. But the process drove that. There wasn't the outcome was unanimous support, but the process allowed for a lot of give and take and back and forth and understanding all the constituencies and their issues. So I don't get hung up on, you know, is there a lot of debate? Are all the votes unanimous and that's a bad board? I think the process determines effectiveness. And I think in some ways good governance results in, you know, unanimity of the outcome because it's all been vetted. Even if you disagree, I don't think there's anything wrong with having a non-unanimous vote as long as then if I'm the no, I support the conclusion.
All right, Paul Taylor.
Madam Chair, I'm going to apologize to you and my fellow RCA members by interrupting the flow of the conversation and to take this opportunity to publicly acknowledge Norm Rickman's reaching out to students on behalf of all of the Taylor family. Our daughter Lisa graduated from the Carlson School of Management in the fall of 1961. Her first job 19 years ago this month was in Chicago with Anderson Consulting. And who introduced Lisa to Chicago? Norm, thank you very much.
No question.
No.
I knew he would owe me sometime. I only did it.
It took 19 years.
Hey, I got nothing but time.
Mr. Rickman, I'm really intrigued by the fact that at a time when I think there was definitely not enough support for African American colleges, you were involved. That's what your opening statement was, right? That you actually used some of your skills to help with the capacity.
No, I actually had the opportunity to, and I turned it down.
Oh, you turned it down. Okay.
I was interested in it, but mm-hmm. I had debt coming out of grad school.
Oh, that's right, and you didn't want
to.
Yeah.
And I decided to, take a job and. I had a Woodrow Wilson Fellowship grant.
Well, here's the irony. I had a Woodrow Wilson grant to study public policy. So on the flip side, it was investing in people of color to study public policy, and I'm here today. So it's very intriguing that you're in that pool of people. So to take this question beyond an equity and excellence, after you're done being a regent, how do you think you would have shifted the conversation to one around those concepts? And currently there is a reimagining paper and document that is being followed by the university. I believe it's a pretty strong set of recommendations and goals of each department to look at faculty, look at student outreach. It's all the gamut. And Dr. Rusty Barcelo, the reason why I keep bringing up this document, one of my mentors, Dr. Rusty Barcelo, who's left the state now, was in charge of that under the leadership of Dr. Jones and Dr. Brunix. Tell me a little bit more in terms of, again, after your tenure, how do you think you would have shaped that conversation?
I don't know exactly those activities that you described, so it's hard to answer. But I can tell you what I did at Blake and kind of how I feel about this. Sometimes the people that are the biggest advocates in these areas are such advocates that they shut people down. And at Blake, in order to get the conversation going, and we're not done by any stretch, but we said this isn't about the 20% and special programs. This is about academic excellence, and it's about 100% of the community. So unless 100% of the community buys into whatever you're going to do, you're going to have resistance. But the worst resistance is people just ignoring it, just kind of, Blake is doing this stuff, we'll just, doesn't affect me, it's typical, we'll just ignore it. That's not the objective. We have a lot of success stories in this area at Blake, we always have, but every year as a trustee, I'd see a graduate get up, an African-American typically get up, a kid that you would be proud to, come to the U, go to any college, who did very well, who'd say, I never really felt like I belonged here. I don't really think it's my school. I'm glad I came. I had a great experience, but it's never felt like it was my school. So that's what always resonated with me. Okay, how do we pull all the levers to fix that? We had a big initiative in the white privilege area, which shut down a lot of conversations. Because if you want somebody to come on board with a program, you don't tell them that you're only successful in anything you ever did because you're white, and that's how people interpreted some of the messaging, which of course was wrong. But you have to be very sensitive to the whole community in terms of how you do this. I'm very sensitive to well-meaning people involved in this who pound the table, typically white people who go, I get it, you don't. So we're going to educate you. I think in this whole area there needs to be less of that and more collaboration, more understanding of what we're really trying to do. And it's not about them, it's about us. At Blake, for example, one of the things we talked about early on is, we have to do this because the most selective colleges and universities in the U.S. are already more diverse than we are. Okay, so we got to do this. And if you think about that, that's true, but that messaging is, we really care about our traditional white students of wealth, so we want to get them into these colleges, so we have to do this to get, it's not why you should do it. You should do it because it's the right thing to do, and you should do it because if you don't, you're cheating those kids out of an excellent education. So I would be, to answer your question without all this rambling, I would be very sensitive to looking at what we're doing, why we're doing it, and is it focused right? I get very leery about professionals in this area, professionals in social justice, professionals in equity, because I would, okay, what's your agenda? Okay, what are we doing and why? And how are you thinking about it? Because if it's compartmentalized, I think it's not going to be successful. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing from your point of view, but that's how I would.
You've answered the question very differently from any other region. I think it's more in depth, actually.
David Fisher, please.
Thank you. Mr. Rickman, you have some great qualities and a great passion, I think, for the things that you take into your area of influence. Things I'm looking for personally as a member of this body would be skills, commitment, and ideas. I think you've alluded to the position that you need to know more about the university and know how you can help it. But I'm really looking for something that will help distinguish you from other individuals whom we're interviewing for these positions. And the university has many challenges. I'm just wondering which would be the top two or three that you would want to focus on as a University of Minnesota regent, and how would you know if you're successful?
I think where I have the most passion is the undergraduate area. I think kids first when I think of anything the university does. So that's where my passion would lie. In terms of actual, I do think making sure that there's a smooth transition is a significant responsibility, and I get that. I do think that the university needs to have a stronger voice in the whole K-12 situation in Minnesota. I think that would help everybody. I don't think that the voice is heard enough, and there's nobody else who could have that voice. So that would probably be number one thing I would say. I don't have any lower level or agendas. I have lots of opinions about things, but I think they're inappropriate for the level that a regent would be at. So it would really be, I think that helps with the state. Maybe I'm naive about that. I don't know. But I think that would, again, I don't understand why the university can't be the same beacon for underprivileged kids as it was for me a long time ago. I don't understand why kids in North Minneapolis can't think of the U as a real viable option, and then whatever it takes to get them there is available. And not just North Minneapolis, the whole state. Okay. I don't know if that answers your question.
I can figure it out. Thank you very much.
Okay, go ahead, Paul, and then Jerry Rogers, and
thank you, Madam Chair. Sir, the skunks on the farm in Hutchinson were probably not the only skunks you ever met in your life. Can you tell us quickly about three other skunks you ran into and what you did about it?
In terms of
whatever, just skunks.
I wasn't equating that experience to being a regent. This concept had an impact on education. I want to make that very clear. Let's see.
Sir, I'll withdraw it.
No. I want to answer it. I'm trying to think of it. I don't want to, refer to individuals or situations as skunky. But you're really talking about challenges,
or people who were real challenges.
Maybe I've been lucky. One of the last things I did at Accenture was we had a joint venture with Sony Corp. And in the media asset management area. And it was strategic for Accenture to work with Sony, and the business case, the viability of it was more in question to me, but it was all about building a better, tighter relationship. And the CEO, or the executive from Sony that oversaw this, pulled me in and said, you're going to have a real hard time with the guy out in Palo Alto, the Sony guy, who's a real a-hole. He's not going to like, the reason you're running this and not him is he needs, And I looked at him and I said, that's not the problem we're going to have. we're going to have a problem of market traction, because I'm not worried about, and I had never met the guy. I had heard that he was, and when I met him, yeah, he's a little bit different, but we got along great. We're friends to this day. I gave him his space. He gave me my space. People that are really difficult, I tend not to have in my life. Clients, I've had difficult clients, but never. I'll give you one. We built a house on Lake Minnetonka, cash, no debt. we had a subcontractor that cheated us out of $27,000. And it took 3 years, but we got him convicted of a felony. Oh, actually, I think he copped on to a gross misdemeanor. It took 3 years. It took somebody like me just not giving up, because the county did a great job, Hennepin County, but they got other things to do. And I used to say, if somebody had stuck a gun in my back and took $100 at the ATM machine, they'd be all over that. If somebody steals $27,000 the way that they did, it took 3 years, but we got them convicted. So that's maybe
so
the extreme.
Beware.
That's the extreme skunk. Yeah, right. I don't know. That's only one, but.
All right. Jerry Rogers, then Margaret Carlson, then Patrick Duncanson, then Lois Josephson, and Arvell Brady. Okay.
Thank you. Mr. Rickman, unlike Billy, I did grow up in that farmhouse. It was 200 miles further north. So I can understand that.
Did you have brothers to sleep with, or were you?
I did. I was intrigued by your statement that you'd like to join organizations that are successful and hopefully make it a better place after you leave. Mm-hmm. I'd like your views on what's successful about this organization, that being the university, and what can you do as a regent to make it better when you leave?
I think it has been successful in terms of just dealing with all the uncertainty. The financial condition is sound. More importantly, the mission. I mean, I think of the mission simply as being a beacon for undergraduate education, sending students back out into the state and the community and the world. And the same thing with research, the research imperative in the mission. I think the university is – I think that's widely known, but I thought I knew it, and I know more about that just getting ready for this meeting. It's an amazing success story. That's how I would say, you know, we're doing a very good job. We need to keep it going, and I commend the current leadership. I think they've done a good job. I think in the Regents meetings themselves, I think I would push for more debate or more. I would want to see more debate, and maybe that happens in committee meetings. Maybe I'm not knowledgeable, but I would. Want to mix things up a little bit more in a positive way. I think the university has a long-range plan. I think it looks sound to me. There's critical success factors. You know, what defines success at the university? That's been defined. There are measures that are being monitored. All that's good stuff. I'm going to come back to in 6 years or whenever. What's the status of Minnesota education? You know, is the university still doing a great job? And is that trickling down to the K-12 system in a real viable way, not just people talking about it? And here's what the university did to improve Minnesota education. That's, you know, training teachers. I have a son who did Teach for America for 2 years in L.A., one of the worst schools in L.A., so I appreciate some of the challenges. He did it. I didn't. So, but that, to me, would be the ultimate goal. I do no harm would be how I go in. In other words, don't be negative. Support the president. Appreciate what's been done. Don't have an agenda other than a broad one that you can work on and get consensus for.
Thank you.
Okay, Margaret Carlson.
You answered for the most part my question, but I'll reframe it and you might add another couple points. You have the opportunity to look at the board meetings. I think first, thank you, because I think an awful lot of our candidates probably don't even know where those meetings are held. So you said one thing you'd like to do is mix it up, more debate. What couple of other things would you like to see happen in the interaction of the board members among themselves or with the president?
Outside of the board meetings? Or?
In the board meetings.
I think that the equity pluralism topic is a great one that should be aired out in some kind of open forum. What are we thinking? What are we doing? Why are we doing it? So I think there are topics that people have, you know, different. I think finances and metrics and all those things are fairly covered, but I think some of the things that are very impactful, including this, again, K-12 education, what role should the university play? How does it help the university with the state going forward? What's the value proposition for the university to do more? I mean, those would be things, when I say mix it up, talk about those things. I mean, I see the meetings are a lot of reports, good reports, great people, lots of documents. I'm assuming a lot of the work is done beforehand. It looks like a lot of work, a lot of committee meetings, and you can't have every meeting be open discussion, but I do think there's more room for maybe having time on an agenda just to talk about an issue. And I don't know if being a public forum, I don't think I've seen a public forum, you can't talk about certain things. You can't talk about legal matters and personnel, and I get that. But there are some things I think that you could talk about that would be of interest to.
Patrick Duncanson.
Thank you. maybe following up on something Margaret touched on, but you had mentioned earlier, and I guess that's what I'm the parallel with Margaret here. You had mentioned earlier about challenges to the mission of the university. We think about the mission of the university as a land-grant institution of research, education, and extension. Right. We all know that there's significant financial challenges in the short run. What else would you add to short-term challenges? And then thinking out longer-term, what would you think would be a challenge to that core mission longer-term, maybe out 5 or 10 years?
I think you can. The core mission is a broad. To me, that's broad. It's what are we talking about for this level of funding? It's going to require this tuition, or it's going to cause cutbacks. And say, as I heard Bob Runick say, you know, we've been asked to do more with less. We're out of less. You know, we can't do it anymore. Where is that? And defining what that means and then educating people on that ahead of time before it becomes a crisis would be important to me. So where those cuts would be, I know they cut back on extension. They've reduced the extension locations. I mean, that's the first little dabble. I don't know. It scares me. I would want to define what kinds of things would we have to do, what scenarios would we have to deal with given certain situations. Again, I don't think you can control the state legislator funding. I think you have to manage what you can control, but you have to understand the consequences. So it depends on the specifics. You know, how much can we raise tuition? How much? And should we? How much? What do we have to cut? And, oh, by the way, are those things that the legislator would support cutting? And then if not, then you have a reason for a conversation. But I don't know exactly to what level that's all been done. I just would want to look for the levers as opposed to having, you know, something specific like, you know, close the campus or something crazy like that.
Can I follow up? A little longer term. I think most of the comments you've made are, we hope, short term. Mm-hmm. Longer term, anything to think about as far as challenges?
To the university?
And I'm going to say specifically to the university mission of the three, the three-legged stool, the three aspects of its core mission. And if you don't, that's fine.
I'm just I feel good about research. I don't see any challenges to research other than keeping, you know, quality faculty and being a draw to keep that engine going. And if state funding doesn't recognize the investment and the multiplier effect of the university, I don't know if that would be threatened. But I don't worry so much about that. It seems like that's working. I worry about tuition going up. And then what that might mean for accessibility, and extension has already kind of been dealt with. I guess longer term, again, I go back to I'm more concerned about something that maybe isn't stated in the mission but should be part of it, which is, and probably was in the original mission, the assumption is the university is going to be the heart of Minnesota education. And I think we have issues there that are unaddressed that could make it could be a problem for the university. If your feeder system is weaker, that's not good. And if other kids, if a lot of kids that have options go other places, that's not good. So university needs to be a draw for all students, even those with choices. Obviously, kids have choices today. But can we be a draw for the underprivileged kids who would give them the same boost that I got?
Thank you.
Lois Josephson, Ben Ardell, and Bert.
I'd like to comment on a word choice you've used a couple of times during the course of your conversation with us. And that's the university being the beacon that it was for you. I want to say about two more sentences, and I may not make it through them without my voice break. It's a fabulous choice of words. And you're right. It isn't. And I had cousins in your home situation. I wasn't in your home situation. But I know the way in which the university was spoken, and it isn't it. So I encourage you to, whether you're on the Board of Regents or not on the Board of Regents, to continue to ask that question. You've come around to it about three or four times. Mm-hmm. My question goes to your thought process and the ways in which you have very directly commented on a couple of critical issues and how in a board setting they have been grappled with when you were present. And just recently, as Margaret followed up, you spoke again to wanting to have those kinds of conversations to a greater degree at Board of Regents. You used the term, I know it's an open meeting. Mm-hmm. Do you have any experience in an open meeting environment as a board member? And talk a little bit about just how real the potential is in your mind of having the kinds of conversations that you referenced at Blake in an open meeting environment.
Yeah, all the boards I've been on technically were open meeting unless they were executive session. Of course, no one ever comes.
Right. The no one ever comes piece is the difference.
Right. I understand why this is majorly different than that. And maybe the answer is you have board meetings where you conduct business and then you have other forums to talk about pluralism, equity, and those kinds of things. So you have dialogue with regions kind of events. I don't know if that would be better. If you take it out of the governance meeting venue and put it into communication, dialogue, input, maybe that would be a way to do it. I'm not advocating for, you know, all meetings have to be public, because I know people that preach for that sometimes don't have the kind of those can be chaotic, and that could be, you know, the worst of all situations for effective governance. But the point is kind of valid. You know, it's a public group. There's a public accountability. And in that public forum, if all you do is approve consent agendas and ask questions to a presenter, I understand frustration with that.
Thank you.
Ardell Brady.
Thank you for being here again. And you've made a couple references to sports, and you are a graduate of the same high school that produced Lindsay Whalen. And right or wrong, athletics oftentimes are the face of the university, and they may influence the public's perception about the quality of the university as a whole. Right. And wonder, and also certainly contribute to the amount of money that may be given to the university, whether it's athletics or the foundation. What are your thoughts about the cost of athletics at the U? And also then, how involved do you think the Board of Regents should be, or their role in that arena?
I think you're right. I think people's perception of the U can be influenced positively or negatively through sports, probably unfairly in both cases. I'm a big fan. I've been a season ticket holder on a couple occasions. I'm not now, but I've been to – I always watch the games on TV if I'm not there. So I'm a big supporter of the Gophers, as painful as that is sometimes. Only in football. Only in football. I went to the Final Four when Clem had it, and then unfortunately that apparently never happened.
That never happened, yeah.
I called Northwest Airlines to send – I never took that flight. I must not have been there because I flew to Indianapolis to go to this event that never happened, so I want my money back. They didn't buy it. but I think ideally athletics should be a moneymaker for the university, I think. And I don't know exactly what the position is now. I know football is the key part of that. But I would strive to have that happen, whatever that takes. I think I have strong feelings about the football program. I'm not active, but I just think there's been too much, too much acceptance of kind of a mediocre football program. But then would I risk a strategy that would maybe lead to other problems, you know, through recruiting? And no, I don't think athletics is the primary mission of the university.
Thank you.
But I would hope that it would cover the cost. I'm not in favor of alcohol at the TCF Bank Stadium. I was at the Ohio State game, and there were with two 11-year-old girls, and there were four people behind us drunk and said things I wouldn't. Horrible experience. So we got them kicked out. There's no place for that. I don't go to Vikings games for that reason. In the suites, I could see a compromise, but I do think it should strive to pay for itself if it's not already doing so.
Thank you.
Bert Swanson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I really appreciate your concern for students, in particular not only the feeder system, but once they get here, in order to make that happen and really have the teaching program that we need, teachers need to be recognized as well as researchers. And I don't think that's really the case. The teachers count, but they really don't count when it counts going forward for the advancement, payments, and that kind of thing. What do you think you could do for recognition and rewards and so forth for teachers?
That's interesting. I have a little bit of experience with that at Blake with either a pay-for-performance program, which was very controversial. Spent a lot of time with faculty getting their view of the world, even though it's not college level. But I'm a big fan. I do think there's reluctance for performance measures and evaluations, which I think is part of the problem, at least in K through 12. I don't know about the U, but I think... teachers are obviously a very valuable resource. It's the first time I've ever heard anybody say that they're not as valued as highly as researchers. That would disturb me a lot. I think in defining excellent education and academic excellence, you have to have some kind of strategy for teacher development, which would include evaluation and advancement.
Let me give you an example. When you go forward for advancement, you don't put down what your appointment is. and if you're 100% teaching and you don't have a list of publications, just publish or perish.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't know that you're 100% teaching when they evaluate your record. Okay. And so teaching becomes some of a second class citizen unless you're really right. doing a lot in the other area.
It's kind of always been that way, though, hasn't it?
Yes, it has.
Yeah. So.
Okay. I've got two people yet on the question list, and really, really, really short question, Harriet. What?
I will withdraw mine for future okay. discussion.
Paul Thatcher.
Or a little tiny yes or no one. I discern in your early description of the meetings that you viewed on the tapes, apparently. Would it be fair to say that, let me just say this, when part of our statute requires us to go out and recruit members,
right.
and we're supposed to recruit the best and the brightest to come and serve this great institution, I find that almost unfailingly, I'm not only told no, I'm told hell no, and I'm told that always the same two reasons. They meet too often, and when they meet about the wrong things. They aren't discussing the huge, big picture, important policy issues that should be involved in running this institution. And my yes or no question to you is, do I discern in your discussion of what you found on those tapes and fast forward, that perhaps you'd be willing to entertain a conversation about how those meetings could be?
Sure.
Thank you.
Yeah, but again, I'm not criticizing the meetings or the
No, these
results.
People are. You aren't.
No, but I do think there could be another venue where you could deal with some of that stuff more effectively.
Okay. Close a brief closing statement. Would you like to?
Okay. I appreciate the chance to answer all your questions. The university is in my gut, my heart and my gut, for all the reasons I've talked about. And I think that there should be a lot of people on the Regents that say that. I do think when I look at the mix of the Regents, I do think more business background would be good. Other organizational perspectives, business and otherwise, would be a good thing to add to the mix. I think I'd bring that. I would do the work. I realize it's a lot of work. I live with a 15-year-old and an 11-year-old girl. Okay, on a daily basis, I exist on a spectrum from dork to tool. Okay. the midpoint is either dweeb or noob. I haven't figured that out. So from a purely selfish standpoint, I like to get out of the house. I do think it would be very challenging for all the reasons that you've brought up. And I think it would be fun. And if it's not fun now, it would be more fun after I'm involved. I can guarantee you that.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for your
thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.